Support for WPR comes from Focus on Energy. Committed to helping Wisconsinites focus on the planet by making smart energy choices. Energy resources for Earth Day and every day can be found at focusonenergy.com.
Here in the upper Midwest, we certainly treasure the times of year when we can garden outdoors. But one of the realities we deal with is, of course, that we have spent a lot of time indoors, especially in the severe winter like we've had this year. So having a range of houseplants that are best in different seasons just makes a whole lot of sense. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. My guest, Tova Martin, is the author of a dozen gardening books, including just a beautiful book. It's called The Unexpected Houseplant, 220 Extraordinary Choices for Every Spot in Your Home. She is a horticulture industry veteran and a sought-after speaker and trainer. She's been with us a number of times and joins us from her home in Connecticut. Tova, thank you so much for joining us again for Garden Talk.
Delighted to be with you.
Well, it's always great to have you along, and I want to let our listeners know that they can call in with questions at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We're certainly in the midst of a long, cold, and severe winter, and you've certainly gotten your share as well.
I hesitate to say that we're right alongside you, but we're right behind you.
Yeah, I tell you. So that's why houseplants, I think, are so much fun and so nice to have when we have weather like this. You divide your book, The Unexpected Houseplant, 220 Extraordinary Choices for Every Spot in Your Home, by seasons. And let's talk about some of the winter plants. How did you decide what went into that chapter?
Well, you know, that's really when we really think houseplants, you know, we are sort of desperate at that time of year, aren't we? You're starving for color, and I have to say that there's a lot of plants that really deliver at that time. They do a great job of really delivering in winter. So it's a critical time. I find that there are flowers, and you know what one of my favorite ones is, Larry?
What?
A geranium.
Yeah. Sure.
A pelargonium, you know, the zonal geraniums, little things that they get out on Memorial Day, you know?
Yeah.
That they just bloom and bloom and bloom in winter.
Isn't that wonderful?
It really is. It really brightens up your winter. And another one I know is a favorite of yours, and that's citrus.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
You know, it's
Limey is producing flowers right now like you wouldn't believe. my lime tree.
Limey, yeah. Flowers and fruit, very, very fulfilling in the middle of the winter. So those are, you know, sort of go-to plants for flowers. And there's nothing like that scent. Is one of the few scents that's universally loved.
Yeah.
Is citrus, the scent of citrus.
I certainly agree with you there. And, you know, what about bulbs? Can we do bulbs in the wintertime? Can't we?
I do. I say one tulip in your windowsill is worth a whole field in spring, you know? It's not hard. I do the species tulips. And they're only like 4 weeks in the refrigerator. I hate to tell you what my refrigerator looks like. They're all on the windowsill now. But you know what? One that's really fast and fulfilling, and that's hyacinths.
Oh, sure. Why not?
Yeah, just put them in water.
Yeah.
Just you can put them in a little forcing glass in water. You don't even need soil for them. And they just pop up, and they come in all kinds of colors, yellow and blue and pink and, you know, a little bit redder and peach. wonderful colors. And that fragrance, you can't beat it.
No, no, for sure. Dorothy in Marshfield has a question for you, and let's go there, and we can come back to these winter plants in a bit. But Dorothy, what's on your mind?
Well, I have a plant which I inherited from my mother, who died about 3 years ago, and it was a gift to her from some old friend of hers, and we only know it as called Moses in the Bulrushes.
Oh, yeah.
I hope you have to mean something to your expert there. And I want to know how to propagate it, because it's getting very long and leggy, and I would like to give cuttings of it to my four sisters.
Well, if it is what I think it is, it's called a roeo, and we used to call it Moses and the Bulrushes because there's a little flower on it that looks like a tiny little, like a little boatish basket.
Hmm.
Like a little basket.
That's it.
Yeah. And that's Moses. That's Moses.
But you said something about arroyo or something.
Yeah, R H. I'm going to look up the spelling for you. R H O E O is how we used to classify it.
Where I should cut it and how I would, is it just a leaf?
You know what?
And is this a good time to do it?
They've got it in the Tradescantia family now. I just looked it up. It's in the Wandering Jew family, the Tradescantia family now. And how you propagate it is you divide it up. You can, from the base, tear off each little rosette, and that's a very easy way to do it. And by the way, they have ones with stripes now and golden ones, all kinds of ones.
I could buy something new, but I would rather propagate this one, which has belonged to my mother for years and years, and I know my sisters would like to have that same one.
Yeah.
Isn't that a wonderful thing to share them? It makes all the difference when you get a plant from somebody. All of a sudden, you're a steward of that plant, and you're keeping the flame going.
Yeah,
right, exactly. Would you tell me? I'm not very experienced as a houseplant gardener, and the description you gave me of what to do wasn't complete enough for me to feel confident that I can follow it correctly.
Okay. What you want to do is take the plant out of its container, and so that you can see the roots, all right? And then grab one of those little rosettes of leaves, and you'll see that you can... There'll be other ones, other
There's
little rosettes.
Three long apart things that are probably each 2 feet long.
Yeah.
And
now you go down to the roots and tear each section off by the roots, so that it's a separate little section. You see, you can tear them apart. It's really fun. You can like wrestle the roots apart.
Ah.
Well, I can do that. Makes sense to me, but you said something about these little clusters. Those show up down the,
a foot or so down the
stems.
Yeah. Well, it's down in the roots that you're taking each cluster of leaves, it's each little rosette of leaves off from the other ones, and then you take and you pop them separately.
Yeah. And there you go. That should work.
The little blossoms that I'm using as seeds. I just separate the single plant into.
Yeah, it doesn't. The flowers will come with it. You know, they'll come off with that cluster of leaves. That little bunch. You'll see when you take it out of the pot. It'll be pretty obvious to you.
Thank you very much for calling, Dorothy. Good luck.
Thank you, Dorothy.
Yeah, is this a good time to be cutting the houseplants?
Well, this one, we're not taking cuttings, but you can propagate. Yes, Larry. we're coming into, in 1 week, it'll be the beginning of March.
Yeah.
And I always count that as when the light really begins to increase. It's a great time in March to begin to propagate plants, get ready for spring.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. And can we, well, let me put it this way. What kinds of plants can we successfully take cuttings from?
You know, I love to do my scented geraniums, and all my geraniums, actually. I love to take cuttings of those because they're easy, and you can just, you know, pot them. Just take about 3 or 4 inches off the top. You can get a little bit of rooting hormone, but usually geraniums don't even need it. And you put them in a little bit of soil, and they're fine. You don't have to even put a baggie over it. But you know, Larry, do you know the old-fashioned, have you ever seen the old-fashioned way that they used to propagate? They used to just take a drinking cup and put it upside down over the little cutting.
Yep.
That raises the humidity.
Yep. I saw that. I'm old enough to have seen that.
It's a very pretty way to do it. It's much better than a baggie. It looks much better than a baggie, too.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, yeah. How much stress does the plant undergo for when you take cuttings from it?
The actual plant itself, you know, the mother plant,
That's
saying thank you. It's saying, I needed that, thank you, I needed that haircut, and now I'm going to branch out, you know, and it'll just be a better-looking plant as a result. The little cutting, it depends on the cutting, whether, you know, the plant, how much stress it takes to, you know, to propagate it, but I find that ones that are not woody are easier to do. The woody ones are a little harder. Like bougainvillea, that's a hard one. But, you know, if you try a coleus, that's like bingo. You know, you're bound to succeed. Or plectranthus also, you're bound to succeed with those. They're easy to do, whereas the citrus, a little bit harder. You know?
And to get them off to a good start, use a little rooting hormone.
You can put a little rooting hormone on the bottom. You can do, let me see, I'm thinking of other ones. Ivies are really easy. Boy, some of those, they already have the little roots started.
Yeah.
You know?
Sure.
And you can just take some with some roots and even pot them up as plants.
And when do we put them into dirt?
When you see the roots, when the roots start, and usually you can almost tell from the stem because, you know, it'll stop wilting so often, you know. It won't need water as frequently when it's got the little roots, and then you pot it up into the next, you know, pot up into a small container. Don't overdo it. You know, some people mm-hmm. think that they can graduate it straight to college from nursery school, and you can't do that.
Oh, my goodness. Tova Martin, our guest today, author of a dozen gardening books, including The Unexpected Houseplant. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up next week on Garden Talk, gardening guru Melinda Myers will be with us, and we'll talk about her new book, The Midwest Gardener's Handbook. Always lots of fun when Melinda joins us, and it's always a lot of fun when we get to talk with Tova Martin. She is with us today to talk about our houseplants. And again, if you have a question, call in at 1-800-642-1234. Maybe you've got a great photo or a question to share on our Facebook page. You can do that. Just go to The Larry Mueller Show or email us at talk@wpr.org. Looking forward to hearing from you. Ann in Wauwatosa has a question next. Hi, Ann. Thank you for calling.
Hi.
What's on your mind?
Well, I have an orchid plant that somebody gave me about 6 weeks or so ago, and it's blooming and it was lovely. And all of a sudden, it's starting to lose its flowers. And I don't know anything about orchid plants, and I'm wondering, is it dying or am I not doing the right thing for it?
Well, do you know what kind of orchid it is?
No, but the flowers are small, and they're pink.
Okay.
And I don't know anything about it. I can't even remember who gave it to me. But I think they think I have a green thumb, and I don't.
Well, it might not be anything you're doing wrong. Tova, what do you think?
Well, without seeing the actual orchid, it's hard to tell. But, you know, it could be that sometimes people pick up orchids in, you know, places from, like, a store that hasn't given it, you know, enough humidity. And its bloom, it's sort of meant as like a gift plant that'll be pretty like a bouquet, you know? And and it's not, shall we say, it's on at the end of its cycle. How's that for an explanation? But what I'm suggesting is, I'm thinking maybe if you just kept it a while and saw how the leaves look, that would tell you whether the plant is actually dying or if it's doing well. Now, I'm going to give you some general hints about how to be a good host for that orchid and see if that helps a little bit. And they would be, what's your bathroom like?
It's really small. And this would be hardly...
Does it have any light in it? I mean, from windows?
No.
No. Oh, okay. Then that wouldn't be... Sometimes, you know, bathrooms are like spa treatments for plants. You
know? I see. Because you know what I think I'm doing wrong? I have it in the window right above a heating vent. I better take it away from there.
Yeah, because, you know, orchids of all the different... Now, they've given you a little bit of a challenge plant here, but... this is getting your green thumb real green real fast. But I'm thinking that if you gave it a little bit a place with more humidity, that might help a lot.
Okay.
And heating units are usually, you know, pretty...
Oh, yeah,
pretty
drying it out. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah,
like,
especially
should I
this time of year.
On the other hand, they don't like wet feet. So if you put them in, if you put the pot in... in a little tray that maybe has some stones or pebbles or something in it where you can elevate the pot above and then water and have some water down in there, that water from the tray would help with the humidity too.
Yeah, Larry's absolutely right. That's a really good way to raise the humidity. I think I heard you asking a little bit about misting or spraying it.
Yes.
And that
yes.
does not really increase humidity very much. It just gets, you know, sort of the foliage wet, and it doesn't really help with that unless you were to do it every 15 minutes, 24/7. So you don't want to be saddled with that kind of responsibility. So instead, I'm thinking, you know, a humidifier might be good. Or my favorite, you know what, my favorite way to increase the humidity is? Larry, can you guess?
Turn on the shower?
Well, it's also to have, like, lots of plants.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
They love it. You know, it's help in numbers. The more plants you have together, the more, you know, the humidity right around them is going to increase. So that's an idea.
Oh, good. Well, that gives me some insight into how to really take care of it.
Most orchids like an east or west facing window.
So think about that.
Most of them don't like or even need a south window, and north is not bright enough.
Now, so there you go. Good luck, Ann. Thank you so much for calling.
Thank you, Ann.
Appreciate your call. You can join in, too, by the way, at 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call. We'll get you on pretty quickly. Let's go to a Facebook question from Kara, who has an aloe houseplant. She says, I keep it in a south-facing window that gets a lot of sun when we are fortunate to have it. My plant is a funky pinkish-orange color instead of green. Too much sun, not enough. Too much water, not enough. It seems on the verge of croaking. Help! Oh, my goodness.
Oh, well, Kara, it is, you know, your aloe, it loves the sun, especially in a window. I find that, you know, if you put them outside in the summer, they can burn. But in a window, south is fine, especially in the winter. I'm wondering whether you might be overwatering.
Could be.
If you know, you ask too much water. So I'm wondering if it's because they don't really need much water, even though they've got, you know, an aloe, you think of it, it's very succulent, and it's sort of like a water storage unit. It's nature's way of making a plant that can store water and doesn't need water often for very, very arid conditions. But sometimes in light, they turn a slight pinkish color, and that's not bad. It's not a problem. There are aloes out there that are natural, you know, they're hybridized that are pinkish. Some of them are pretty beautiful, actually. But you're thinking, you know, you're saying it's on a little bit on the verge of croaking, so I'm thinking it doesn't look that great, and I'm thinking you might be overwatering it.
Pinkish orange color is not good.
Mm.
No. So the water, yeah, I think it's worth holding back on the water a little bit, seeing what happens. We had an email from Todd in Delavan, who said a couple of years ago, a friend gave us a potted pine tree. I don't know the species, but it has done very well, growing to over 5 feet tall in a room that gets only afternoon sun. In the summer, my wife likes to take it outside on our deck, thinking it would be, would like being outside. However, after a few days, it starts turning brown, and we have to bring it back in the house. After a week or so, it's as good as new. My question is, how can a tree that presumably would do well in its natural habitat be adversely affected by the sun? Temperatures doesn't seem to be a factor. And there are some trees, pine-type trees, that don't like a lot of sun, Thelva.
That's true, and palms don't really need a whole lot of
actually
light.
Pines, she said.
Oh, it was pine tree.
Yeah.
Pine tree, wow.
A type of pine.
And, well, I'm wondering whether, with pine, I'm wondering whether if she's putting it out in sun, too much sun, and it's getting maybe sunburned if it's sudden, you know?
Yeah.
You have to acclimate plants slowly to light. Even, you know, we were talking earlier about Kara and her aloe, and, you know, I was saying that it can, even though it's a succulent, normally likes a lot of light, it will sunburn if you put it out too suddenly. So what I would suggest is, take that plant and put it sort of in a shady area first, and then you can sort of acclimate it gradually. It's really important with your house plants to do that gradually. Also with your vegetable seedlings, anything you take outside from inside, the you know, it just won't be as bright. Even if you had it in the south window, it's not as it's getting much more light, and it can sunburn.
Yeah, there you go. You can join in too at 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call; we'll get you on pretty quickly here. Let's go to a Facebook comment from Kathy, who says, "I overwinter 6 planters of geraniums in an upstairs bedroom that gets lots of sunlight in the winter. It's almost as good as a greenhouse."
Yeah. Wow. I'm looking at your picture, Kathy. And those are some happy, happy, happy geraniums. And I see a lot of red flowers on them. So, you know, the very, very fulfilling thing to do. And it looks to me as though Kathy has been doing a little bit of grooming and clean, made them so they're branching nicely. And
yeah.
geraniums love, Larry was asking earlier about taking cuttings and about pruning to branch, and they love that. They really do. They just immediately shoot out from the side. So if you're scared of it, don't be.
Yeah.
You know? And she's got this room that's full of geraniums that looks just like a greenhouse.
Yeah, it's really nice. It's on my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show, so if you're wondering what we're looking at, that is exactly what we're looking at. And yeah, those look like really healthy plants, don't they?
They do. And in summer, she's got her whole garden started, basically.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. On the pine, Antoinette called in and said it's probably a Norfolk pine, or it could well be a Norfolk pine, which they prefer a little shadier area anyway.
She's right. The Norfolk Island pine is that's a really easy houseplant, and I find that they look just like a little Christmas tree inside. It looks like you've got a little forest, so it's very fulfilling.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And again, that number, 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call with your questions and comments. And another caller here online. We'll take in just a second. Mary Ann from Waukesha, I believe, up next. So let's go to her. Hi, Mary Ann. Thanks for calling. Mary Ann, are you there? Marianne, I think she's not hearing me for some reason.
Hello?
Hi,
hello?
Mary. Yeah, hi, Marianne.
Hi. I just had one additional thing to say about people putting their plants out on decks next to their house.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The plants are not only getting the direct sunlight from the sun, but they're also getting sunlight reflected off of the side of the house or off the windows of the house or up off the deck. So they'll be getting more sun than if they were planted out in the garden.
Yeah. You know,
might be getting twice as much if they're right next to a white house with a white deck. Or
that's a
okay.
really good point. And it, and also if there's any type of body of water like a lake or something like that, that also reflects water. So absolutely. And I just like to mention how much snow do you have on the ground there?
Oh, we have a lot right now.
Yeah. Well, you know, the snow reflects light into your windows, which is very helpful.
Oh, so it's good.
It's good, yeah. They're, you know, a use for the snow. How's that?
My other tip, hello?
Yeah, go ahead, Marianne.
My other tip is get a small fan and turn the fan on the plants in the house for a couple hours a day before you're ready to set them out so they'll get used to the wind.
Oh.
That's a really
like
good idea.
Like a six-inch fan.
Yeah.
Marianne, that's brilliant. I love it.
Yeah, you're kind of hardening the plants up a little bit or strengthening
yeah.
them up a bit. I like that. Yeah, thanks. Appreciate that. Someone else told me once that when she's getting her vegetables or her tomato plants ready, she's growing them indoors and getting ready to set them out. But she often runs her hand over the plants every time she goes by them. And she thinks that constant, you know, kind of moving them around with her hand strengthens them and makes them stronger for outside.
It can't hurt, right? You're petting your plants.
Yeah, that's right. Bob and Krivitz, thank you for calling. Hi.
Good morning. The Norfolk pine that you were speaking of, okay, I've got one. We have one here at the cabin, and we have one. I live across from Terry Henry Park, south of Sheboygan. We have one there. Now, I've had the same problem with both of these. And we've had about 4 or 5 years where this one up here got to be about probably 4 feet high.
Wow.
And I watered it just occasionally. And as it got bigger, the branches got spindlier, really, really small. And then they get brown and the leaves, the needles start to fall off. Okay, and the same thing is happening in our sunroom down there right now. This one up here, I cut all the way back down to the root. And it took off again, so we're trying it again. But the one out there is doing the same thing. The needles get completely, they dry up on it. Okay, am I doing something wrong here?
Sounds like lack of humidity again.
Yeah.
That might be the issue. That is it a very dry, warm. Are you heating with wood or anything?
I do occasionally at both places, yeah.
Yeah, because wood heat is one of the driest heats.
Sure.
And that can cause needle drop. Mine have tolerated an awful lot, but I'll tell you one other thought, and that might be, is the plant very pot bound? Has it been in the same container a long time?
Yes.
Because 4 feet is pretty large for a plant. You might want to give it a little bit of a root, you know, don't go crazy with it.
The pot that it's in is probably about the largest clay pot that you could find. Okay, it's probably, I would say 3.5 to 4 gallon pot.
Oh, that is big.
That's a big one.
Yeah, I don't think you want to lug around anything heavier than that.
I've got the rollers.
I give a try on raising, get a humidifier or something like that. It'll do you good, too.
Okay, Well, it doesn't seem to be the dry nails. I mean, we've got a gas furnace, too. But, would it help to water the plant more or less?
Well, it helps to cluster many plants because you're watering them, but you don't want to overwater just to create humidity. So what I suggest is that you check the soil top to make sure that it's dry before you rewater. If you got this to 4 feet, it sounds like you're doing pretty well so far.
Yeah, that's for sure.
But I had to cut that one off because the whole top, the whole tree got that way. So I cut it off right down to the ground. That's the one in the cabin here. It's in a south window. So I cut the tree off completely. I thought, well, if the root don't make it, we'll get rid of it. And now it's back up to about a foot.
That's amazing. Well,
you
did something right. I would say you're watering right in that case.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't think the soil has to be redone or anything like that at this time?
Well, you can, root pruning is not so easy, and you sort of have to, it's a hard thing to do with a plant that you don't want to reduce the foliage. Check the roots.
Okay.
There's nothing wrong with taking a plant out of the pot and checking the root system, nothing at all. And just check them, make sure they're healthy. In that case, they should be kind of, creamy colored and plump. Those are important things. And if you see a bunch of, roots that are deadish, like blackish, get rid of them and put new soil in instead rather than trying to graduate it to the next size pot.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, one other question. Okay,
sure.
With humidity, I'm assuming it's taking most of the moisture in through the needles. Would it help if we just took a spray bottle of water and sprayed it occasionally?
Well, I find that misting doesn't really raise the humidity unless you do it, they say, every 15 minutes. They've done studies on this. Every 15 minutes, 24/7. So
okay.
I'm sure you have something else to do besides that.
I'd get a humidifier is what I'd get.
Yeah.
Oh, man. We have, thanks, Bob, for calling. I appreciate your call very much. And again, on Norfolk, just for one more comment, they do usually grow in forests, so they tend to be more used to shade than direct sun anyway. So there you go.
Yeah.
Barb and Wazika, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi, Tova. This is a great show. I just finished your book, A Time to Blossom, this morning, actually. I was reading it. I've been reading the last couple, the last week, and I just had to go get a hyacinth or something to have a blooming, fragrant flower in the house. And a little greenhouse that I went to in Prairie du Chien had one left. And so then I was able to get that and then came home with some other flowering little plants, too, so I get some color in the house. So that was really nice. And then I wanted to say, too, that I have a Moses in the bulrushes that my mother had, and I'm almost 60, and so it's quite old. And what I've done to it, when a piece of it gets too long, I've just cut it off and plopped it in water, and then when it has all these roots, then I go ahead and stick it in a pot, and that's how I've propagated mine.
Well, that's good to know, because I've always just divided them, but it's good to know that they're easy to root. Which you'd think would be the case, being in the Tradescantia family, because those are easy. You know, those just kind of run along the ground. So, but you are so right, Barb, that it makes all the difference when you got a plant from a relative and you're keeping it going, and it's like a little gift from that person still in your life, you know?
Yep.
Yeah. So it's pretty special. I really like it. And in fact, there's another long elbow hanging down that I need to cut off again and start that one. So
why not?
I know. Listening to you today, I thought, well, I'll probably get that done this weekend. So.
Good for you, Barb.
All right. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. And, you know, she mentioned fragrant plants, and that reminds me to go, you know, we were talking more about winter plants, and what are some other fragrant plants in wintertime that are kind of nice if you can get your hands on them?
Well, I have one that's called the Confederate Jasmine. It's a little kind of yellowish flower, and it's creamy yellow flower. It's bloomed for me the entire winter long, and it smells like cinnamon. It's a scent that, you know, who doesn't like the scent of cinnamon, right?
Oh, man. And what is it again?
It's called the Confederate Jasmine. It's not really a jasmine, but it's called the Confederate Jasmine. That's how you'd be able to get. And each flower, Larry, is like a little pinwheel.
Oh,
it's like
goodness.
It's each petal is like curved, and it's a little starburst. And it's the cutest little thing and so fragrant. So that's a good one. And also another, fragrant plants. I've seen a lot of stephanotis in the stores nowadays. I know that they're not usually thought of as a winter bloomer, but they are selling them a lot for winter blooms. So I saw one just the other day, all in bloom.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, and that's a lovely scent. A lot of people know stephanotis from their weddings, et cetera. And, you know, talking about foliar scent, you can grow a lot of herbs indoors.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Yeah. And then, you know, talk about double duty. They will, you can eat them, put them in your winter stews, and they'll have that little zing of summer, like, that fresh zing.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing like fresh herbs compared to dried herbs. They just have more zing, right?
Absolutely.
So how about, thyme? Oregano is a great indoor. Both thyme and oregano, wonderful indoor plants, I find. And winter savory, that's a nice one.
Yeah, we have some thyme growing right next to limey, our lime tree. And it's doing very well. Doing very well. Tova Martin, our guest today, the author of a dozen gardening books, including The Unexpected Houseplant. She's our guest on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you listening in for this edition of Garden Talk, talking plants today and zeroing in a bit on houseplants with Tova Martin, author of The Unexpected Houseplant, among other great books. And it's wonderful to have her with us. Certainly great to have you listening in. Questions or comments, maybe some experiences to share, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page. And we always love to see photos as well. So if you've got some houseplant photos, please feel free to post them. Connie in Portage has something to share. Connie, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I had an experience. I'm a nurse, and every time I'd go into this one patient's room, it was just the most wonderful fragrance, and it was a Persian violet.
Mm.
And the whole room would just be amazing. And I think they're hard to find, so I wondered if she knew anything about them.
Okay. Persian violet.
Persian violet. I'm not sure are you sure it wasn't the Parma violet?
No, it was a Persian violet.
Persian violet.
Yeah, and this was in Illinois. I don't know if that's any different up here, but it was about a foot high, little tiny purple flowers, and it was maybe a foot across.
Foot high.
Oh, it's just amazing.
You know, I think you're talking about an exicum, which is not... Boy, that goes way back in my memory bank. And it had little purple flowers that everybody would say...
Yes.
You know how it is with fragrance that some people don't smell what other people smell? And
yeah.
I would always say, boy, this isn't as fragrant as I, as I thought. It's called exicum, E-X-A-C-U-M, and it has little, each flower is about the size of a little button.
And they go by Persian violet.
Yeah.
Exicum.
Yeah, well, maybe. I don't know. I'll look that up or see if I can, find it, because I would love to have one again, because I think the whole house would smell. It's just
that's
amazing.
So interesting, because I always said that I couldn't smell that smell, but other people said it's very fragrant. Each flower
is the whole
purple
room.
And
the whole room
yellow
smell.
Center.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
Yeah.
That's it.
Exicum.
But
yeah.
the whole room would be full. I mean, it would be so hard for you not to smell it.
honey, I haven't seen one of those in years.
But I know they're out there.
You do?
Yeah, they're out there. They're,
okay.
What is it, Genenacea family?
I don't know what family the exicum is in. Tell you the truth, I can look that up. But I haven't seen one in a little while, but I'm sure if she hunts it up, she's going to find.
Yeah.
I would.
They were so popular a few years ago.
Yeah, go online.
Yeah, this would have been in the 80s. This was in the 80s.
Yeah.
When I was working in the hospital at that time.
Yeah, and they were just so popular. Yeah, you're right. They're in the Gentian family. And, that was a lovely little, compact little, ever-blooming mm-hmm. plant. Never stopped blooming.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you very much, and I'll try to find one.
Like, go online.
What,
I bet you'll get one.
I tell you what, Connie, you should go into your local garden center, and you ask for it. And I bet they would love to try to find something like that. You know, they love to bring plants in that are going to delight people, and that was just a delight, you know?
So, yeah.
I've already stumped them, so I don't know if they'll like to see me coming. I wanted an apron fern, and they can't find one.
Oh. I'll bet you they'll find one of these, though.
Yeah, I hope so. I'll try. This is a really good house plant.
Thanks, Connie. Thanks a lot for calling. Wow. She had a fragrant one for sure.
Yeah.
And, well, in a hospital room, typically they're not large rooms. And if the door was shut... You know, it, probably a little different scenario than if you just have one in a house where it's maybe a little more open. It might not smell quite, the smell might not be so intense.
Well, it's like a perfume bottle, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's like a perfume bottle. You close the door of any room and you're containing that scent, and that scent is going to smell like more, to tell you the truth.
Judy and Bloomer, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi, I just wanted to tell you that I used to own a flower shop many years ago, and we used to carry Persian violets at this time of the year, and when we ordered them, we ordered exicum. And I don't know for sure, but I suspect that they could even be some sort of an annual, because we always told people after they bloomed, they may not bloom again. And that they wouldn't last for a long time, like for, years and years.
So interesting. That's what... You know, some plants are not really long-lived. I remember cutting them back, and sort of doing the molting, get them to rejuvenate that way, Judy. So that is that's a possible way. Whether they live for years and years, I don't remember.
Yeah, we just told people don't expect that you're going to have a house plant. They were always sold as a blooming plant, you know, mm-hmm. for get well or whatever.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sort of like cut flowers. Yeah.
Yes, yes, yes. But when we ordered them, we ordered Exicum. So I don't know if that answers your questions or not. But
that was very fragrant? Judy?
I don't remember them as being really fragrant, but, you know, when you're in a big shop.
Yeah. It's
and
hard
at
to tell.
This time of the year when you have a lot of hyacinths, yeah. things yeah, like that
true.
Around, you
it's
don't smell
relative,
much
else.
Yeah.
I think Larry's got the spin on that, that it was a hospital room, and so it was a very confined,
yeah.
lovely,
yeah.
warm
that could
situation.
Be.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
could be.
Yeah.
Well,
thanks,
that's
Judy.
What I know. Yeah. Okay, thanks.
Appreciate it. And Linda in River Falls, hi.
Hello, how are you guys?
Great.
Great.
I was calling in to talk about the woman who had gotten a gift of an orchid.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I have, I think they're called Phalaenopsis,
mm-hmm.
a very simple orchid. And I just wanted to warn her, though they like humidity, they don't like to have wet roots.
Yeah.
So the advice I got when I got mine was take it to the sink once a week and drench it with water, let it dry, and then leave it go for till the next week. And also, this for my plants anyway, this time of year is when they're dropping their flowers.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And then she has to wait a whole nother year for more flowers.
Yeah, on the Phalaenopsis, usually it does take a year, but they're wonderful little winter companions. How's yours doing besides...
Oh, you know, I'm going to have a total of 13 flowers on mine.
Oh.
Now I have five.
Wow. Well, she did not have, the earlier caller, I'm sure, did not have Phalaenopsis.
Oh, she didn't.
No, she had these small, very small,
tiny
flowers.
I think she might have had the harder ones.
Small and pink they were.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have one of those too, and I repotted it. I think I put it in too much bigger a pot because it hasn't bloomed again. But I think the same thing holds. Don't water it overzealously.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. They don't like wet feet.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that's all.
Thank you, Linda. Thanks a lot for calling. And let's turn to Barb in Wausau. Hi, Barb.
Hi. My question is regarding orchids. And the type that I had was called Just Add Ice. Are you familiar with that at all? You just put the ice cubes in like once a week. Bought it in a grocery store type setting. And after it lost the flowers and it got new leaves, then eventually the leaves died all back, all off. Is it possible to get that restarted again?
Hmm. Yeah, Just Add Ice is not the name of the flower. It's
it's
a method.
Right.
Of watering.
Mm-hmm.
So
and it had fairly large flowers on it and buds, and they all opened, and I probably had the plant like for a year or so after that, and it got several leaves, but then eventually the leaves just all died back, so I just kind of stuck the pot downstairs, and I'm wondering if there's anything I can do to get it to come back, or is it past its life?
Well, it lost its leaves, did it?
Yes.
Well, that's difficult on an orchid. It really is. That doesn't bode well for the orchid. I would say it's probably a goner.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, I recently bought another one,
mm-hmm.
and how does it take a long period of time for it before it will bloom again, or how do you get it to bloom?
Do you know what type of orchid it was?
No, I don't.
Because a lot of orchids just bloom once a year.
Okay.
But some of them don't. Some of them bloom a little bit more often than that. A lot of them are winter blooming. That's why we love them.
Okay.
A lot of them do bloom in the winter. So is it blooming now?
No, it's not.
It's okay.
Probably bloomed.
at least 4 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's probably not going to...
It boomed 4 months ago. It probably, you're probably going to have to wait for next autumn. For it to
and then
again.
Is it true that I'm supposed to leave that stem of where the flowers were on? Do you leave that and not cut it back?
Well, they can sometimes make another shoot from that stem. I don't usually take those stems off until they begin to brown. And then I take them off.
Okay.
So wait for that. And then if they brown, you know, definitely tidy it up. But if it's still green, just leave it on. They sometimes will send another little, they call a little whip up, a little of flowers coming off of that. And then you get a whole new show. So it's worth a try, right?
All right. I will do that. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks
Thank
a lot.
Thank you so much, Barb.
I appreciate that call very much. Well, you know, isn't that fun to talk about houseplants at this time of the year and think about those beautiful, beautiful flowers and the aroma from the scent of the fragrant plants. I just love to talk about houseplants at this time of the year.
It is when we really need them.
you've definitely got that right, Tova. We're talking today with Tova Martin. She is the author of a dozen gardening books, including The Unexpected Houseplant, 220 Extraordinary Choices for Every Spot in Your Home. Horticulture industry veteran and admired speaker and trainer. And it's great to have her with us on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Friday means Garden Talk, of course, and today we're turning our attention to the plants that share our homes and other indoor places. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along for another edition of Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Tova Martin is the author of a dozen gardening books, including The Unexpected Houseplant, 220 Extraordinary Choices for Every Spot in Your Home. She's a horticulture industry veteran, sought-after speaker and trainer, and she joins us from her home in Connecticut. And Tova, thanks again so much for spending time with us on Garden Talk.
Oh, thank you, Larry. This is so much fun.
Well, we have a great time whenever you're here. I want to give a phone number out. If you have a question or comment or an experience to share relating to your houseplants, I hope you'll join us at 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call. Mike in Milwaukee up next. Mike, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Hi. So I have my houseplants are kind of a collection of just other plants that some of my family were going to get rid of them, and I didn't want to throw them out because, you know, it's a living thing. And then I have a hibiscus, but I'll put them out. I keep them in the living room during the winter, and then I'll put them outside for the summer, usually like May 1st to like about end of October. That's voting season. But it's amazing. They turn super green, and the plant looks different. It perks up more. And then I'll bring them in the house, and by about December, you know, they're kind of drooping, shedding some leaves. It's almost like, you know, they're a little bit bummed because they're in the house. But it's a pretty cool experience to watch that change.
Yeah, I always think hibiscus, you know, as ornamental plants for the house are difficult. But for keeping them over from year to year, they just, you know, drop their leaves and they sort of molt. And then they come back again.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, these are low maintenance plants. So, I mean, I would recommend that you know, if you don't want the maintenance of a pet or the smell or something like that, then boy, there's the plant, and he's a living thing, so it's pretty cool.
They're like pets; they really are. They, you know, I think they're equal. You know, maybe not equally rewarding, but almost as rewarding.
Yeah, and Mike, thanks so much. And sounds like you do a good job of bringing those plants back to life. I had an email from Chris in Stockbridge that kind of goes along with what you were talking about and relates to a previous caller as well. Chris says, several months ago, I called regarding my big, beautiful maidenhair fern that was dead. I'd used the wrong potting soil And Tova, your sympathy was very appreciated. However, hope springs eternal in my heart, so I removed a section from the center, potted it in the correct soil, and waited. And after several weeks, there was a tiny dot of green, and then another. Today, there are 5 fronds, 4 to 5 inches high. It'll take time, but Fern will be restored to her former glory. So thank you.
I love it. I love it. You know, I find that the maidenhairs of all the ferns, they need it the warmest. They really like warm, and they don't like even a little chill. They'll go dormant, but they often come back up again. So I think her point is good, that don't give up hope.
Yeah, absolutely. Wayne in Milton has a comment. Hi, Wayne. Thanks for calling.
Yes, I have a lower level, and it stays kind of cool down there in the wintertime. I would say mid-50s to mid-60s, and there's a lot of light. There's a big patio door. How would a jade plant do in a situation like that? Would that tolerate those cooler conditions?
Yes.
And might be something I take outside in the summertime.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's fine. Again, do that gradual. Don't put it right in the bright light, but when you're bringing it outside, but you know, they can take, I think the jade can take it down to, 50 easily.
Yeah, that shouldn't be an issue.
Okay.
All right, thanks, Wayne.
Thank you.
And Mary in La Crosse, hi.
Hi, I am also a former greenhouse employee, and I have my resource book right here in front of me. And this is hopefully the final answer to the question of Persian violet or exicum. I believe the lady that called in originally called it Persian violet. I thought someone had told her, but it wasn't. It is an exicum, and the Persian violet is very similar to the African violet, so it would have, be smaller and have the blue flowers like she was thinking. But the exicum is what we consider a throwaway plant. And yes, they have lots of blue flowers. They're extremely pretty, extremely fragrant. In fact, when they would come into the greenhouse, we hated to go into that greenhouse because the fragrance was very overwhelming. So I think that the problem was when she was calling it a Persian violet, she simply was calling it by the wrong name. And the exicum, we call it a throwaway plant. They're grown from seed, and when they're done, they're done.
Okay.
And you don't get them to rebloom again.
Yeah, and it's exicum. Somebody wondered, how do you spell that? It's E-X-A-C-U-M is exicum.
And it's in the gentian family.
Yeah, there we go.
In the gentian family. And the Persian violet, of course, is would be in the Santa Paula family. So anyway, I hope that straightens it out for everybody. And this is kind of the time of the year too, when the exicum come into the greenhouses. But to me, because the fragrance was so overwhelming, and I can imagine in a hospital room that it would have been very, very overwhelming. But I do have a question to ask, and it's about someone had asked about the ice thing on the
just
orchids.
Add ice. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, my granddaughter for Christmas got an anthurium, and it says to put 5 ice cubes in it or 7 once a week. And I'm having a hard time convincing her that isn't the way to water it. And I've said, how would you like to have your feet, sit in ice or ice water when you're a warm tropical plant? So can you tell me why these companies are doing this kind of promotion, and what do you think about that?
Yeah,
I don't really understand that either. I'm right alongside you, Mary. I just I guess if people don't know how to water right, but watering a plant is not a hard thing to do. I
think it's a marketing thing.
Yeah, I have heard about these ice cubes before, and I guess to me it seems like the last thing I want to put a plant through would be to, I understand the concept that they melt slowly, but they're ice,
And I've interviewed several times Chuck Aker, who has literally an international reputation when it comes to orchids.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And he says no on the just add ice. Don't use ice. He says don't use ice cubes.
Well, I'm glad to hear that an orchid expert is saying that, because I don't know why. You know, I think it's just one of those fads right now or something.
Yeah, it's just a marketing tool. Mary, thanks for calling. And you can tell your relative that one of the foremost orchid experts in the world, frankly, says no. Rita in Melrose. Hi, Rita.
Good morning to you. I was wondering if your guest is familiar with the Cape primrose.
The Cape primrose, which is actually, I think what you mean is by Cape she means Cape of Good Hope, because it's not a, you know, an American, not a Cape Cod type thing.
Yeah.
But it is the Streptocarpus is actually the botanical on that one. And that's in the African violet family.
That's what I was told, right.
Yeah, and it's a very pretty little thing. It loves warmer temperatures. If you've got a drafty cold house like I do, it doesn't do very well. But in warm temperatures, it's a very easy, rewarding plant.
Okay, now mine has got had a seed pod on it, and I picked the seed pod. What's the chances? How would I go? Could you ever get a plant to grow from the seed pod?
Ooh, it's worth a try, isn't it?
Sure.
Sounds like a fun winter activity to me.
The seed pod is about 5 inches long, and it's twisted like a rope. I haven't untwisted it to see if there's a seeds in it or what it's going to look like.
I would give it a try. You know, here's my advice. Take that seed and put it on, take a pot, put soil in the pot, all right? And
okay.
Then dampen the soil. Just, you know, that you can mist. You use your little mist, your little mister, and
okay.
Dampen the soil, make it, flatten it out, and just spread that seed over the top of it. Don't
okay.
cover it. I think that's one that doesn't really want to be covered.
Okay.
So try it that way, but then what you should do is put either you could take and put like a glass if you happen to have a little glass teacup dish, you know, saucer
okay.
from the teacup. If you put that, if it's clear glass, put that over it, or you can put little saran wrap over it. And keep it in indirect light and keep it warm, and you never know. You could be a mama of many.
Well, it produces so many plants that every couple of years you got to take it apart because it pushes itself out of the pot.
That's true.
Well, thank you so much.
Many more.
Oh, yeah. Rita, thank you so much.
Thank you, Rita.
And, you know, I want to go back to the Facebook page for a minute, because Alex sent a photo and a really nice comment. It says, thank you, Tova, for your wonderful book, The Unexpected Houseplant. It helped get me through winter. I completely agree with you about geraniums. I bring many, I bring mine inside every winter. And actually, Nikki in Racine is the other, and she's sent a very nice photo of her plants.
It is, wow, you should see this room. It's got, talk about geraniums blooming. It looks like she's very fond of geraniums, because I'm seeing a lot of those in there. Plus, I think I'm seeing a few herbs, and it is just, it is like a garden indoors, isn't it? That's like my goal, is I like to make it feel like it's a garden. And I'm looking out the windows of her house, and I'm seeing it snow. So the contrast is wonderful.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And it just reminded me again of your book, and Kendra, the photographer for your book, And the photos in the Unexpected Houseplant are just wonderful.
Well, Kendra Kleineff is such a good photographer, and she, you know, it's not easy to photograph window sills into the light unless it's very cloudy out. But she was just brilliant with it, and I tell you, I transformed her into I gave her a green indoor thumb.
Well, the book is wonderful with the photos, and then of course you have lots of good a nice little story about the plants, and then a lot of great information about where to place them and that sort of thing.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's wonderful. Jean in Menominee Falls, thanks for calling. Hi.
Good morning. I just need to share a story with you about a Hoya plant.
Oh,
my mom had given me, she had received a piece of one around 1956. And in 1968, she gave me a little piece of it. And, of course, mom's had grown to be massive and she wound it into a wreath form in front of a window, and it took up half of a window. It was gorgeous.
Wow.
And mine grew equally beautifully. And the blossoms on it is what was so exciting. When it would blossom, you knew it because the entire house was filled with fragrance.
And isn't that a lovely
scent? Are you familiar with the Hoya?
Don't you think it blossoms? Smells like baby powder?
Ah.
I couldn't tell you that. But the clusters of flowers are probably 3 inches in diameter.
Wow.
And there may be 25 or 30 flowers in a cluster. And the petals of each individual little flower are like velvet. And then in the center, it's like a star, a cream-colored star, and they feel very sharp, like celluloid.
Huh.
And then there's another tiny little star of red in the center of that. And each flower, it's just a work of art.
It's like a star within a star, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, yeah. They're magnificent. And I have a million pictures of them. We moved to a smaller apartment, and I had to give my big plant away. But by the time I did and had shared pieces with many, many people, that plant was probably a good 6 feet high.
Wow.
And it was wrapped around a trellis many, many times.
Oh.
And if I wanted light coming in through that window, I'd have to move the pot.
Oh, man.
It was that big. And it's still doing very well with its new home. I kept one piece of that plant for myself. And it's growing just beautifully, but it hasn't filled the pot yet with its roots. But I see in different junctures of the leaves where it's going to be sending out buds.
Mm.
And I can't wait.
So, you know, Larry, I think Jean has she has the secret to Hoyas that bloom really well, and that is to keep them in, you know, they like to be in the same pot for many years.
Yes.
They bloom better. The more, you know, the tighter their shoes are, the more they bloom. I don't know why that is, but it's definitely the case for Hoyas.
Isn't that something?
Yeah. And we just got a great a Facebook comment from Lori on the sort of the same, well, not sort of, on the same topic, as a Hoya that was her grandmother's, her grandmother's been gone for 50 years.
Wow.
Four generations have had a piece from that plant, very fragrant when blooming. So kind of a similar story.
Yeah, you know, that is definitely an heirloom plant, isn't it?
You
pass it along, and it goes down in your family. Four generations, just think of that.
Yeah, that's wonderful. And Jean, thank you so much for calling.
You are so welcome. And if I can figure out how to do it on a computer, I'll send you pictures of this.
Love to see it.
The pictures are as beautiful as the flowers.
Please
do. I'll be on the Facebook page during the afternoon, so I'll keep checking in, and you can talk to me via Facebook, too.
Okay.
That would be wonderful.
Yeah, that's fun.
Yeah, thank you so much. Thank you so much, Jean, for calling. And Tova, that's so nice of you to do that. You've in past programs, you've stayed and answered questions online on my Facebook page, and that's just been wonderful.
It's really fun. I'd love to see those pictures, Larry.
I want to see more photos. I hope we get some more photos. Robin in Portage, your turn. Hi, Robin.
Hi. I have a jade plant. And actually, I have a pot that's about seven and three-quarters wide at the top, and it's deep. I have six jade plants in there, and they were all from cuttings from my poor, poor old plant that did not get the care it deserved. And it's growing very well, except all six of them have, and they've branched out at the top, mm-hmm. but lost leaves on the bottom. So they're very tall.
They will do that, though. I find that the trunk look is very attractive on the jade, so I don't mind that they, you know, so I know it sort of looks like the elephant knees, but I find it attractive.
Well, I think at this point they're just getting too big to have that many in one pot.
Exactly, yeah.
So I was going to cut cuttings from them. But not the tops this time, just go way down on the stem, leaving enough of the stem that I could use for transplanting, of course. And then there really won't be any leaves left on those stems that are left in the pot. Or stems, I mean leaves. And I'm wondering if I leave those stems as they are, with no leaves in that pot, will they grow new plants?
They will eventually branch out again, and you'll be right back at point A again, I think. I'm thinking that it would probably be best. Is there any way you can divide that up, just take it out of the pot and rip the plants apart?
But then they'd probably...
That might be the way to go.
Yeah, and I was going to take three plants and put them in one pot and three in another, because they're really tall already. They're probably a foot and a half tall.
They will branch from if you cut them down below. As long as there's, you know, you can sort of see creases in them. They do send out little side shoots. It takes a little while, mm-hmm. but they do. So they should respond to cutting them back. Three and three, hard to say whether without seeing, you know, how you've done the configuration, whether they're going to be a nice little colony, or if they're going to be crowded again. Mm-hmm. It optimally, you might try to just divide them up and give them to family and friends.
Yeah.
Oh, no, that's what I plan on doing.
Good for you, Robin. Oh, man. Thanks.
My plants.
Yeah. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And, oh, my goodness, look at the time. Tova, it has been always, it's always such a great pleasure to have you on the show. I really love your book and love talking with you. It's 90 minutes goes really, really fast. Thank you so much.
I had so much fun. It just makes the winter disappear, doesn't it?
It does.
Talking about those Persian violets and the scent.
Oh, man. And you'll be online on my Facebook page for a while.
I will.
Thank you so much. Tova Martin is the author of The Unexpected Houseplant, 220 Extraordinary Traces for Every Spot in Your Home, with some wonderful photography to go along with it. And she has another dozen books or so that she's written as well. And again, if you want to visit with her some more, you can go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. She's going to be answering some more questions there. I know we have several up already that I'm sure she'll be answering. Thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store.